Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I'd like to welcome you. Today, we're going to take a careful look at what we can do to live a longer life, lessen our opportunity for a heart attack or stroke or cancer, information that literally can change the outcome of disease. Then I'm going to spend some time talking about the economy, the new tax bill, and the problems I have with it. Also today, we're going to take a look at this investigation into Trump and his transition team. And now we're finding out information about Mueller's team. And this should be of concern to all of us. Set aside the biases, set aside the partisan, imbalances. We're going to hear from one attorney who I have yet to have anything he said that I have found to be inaccurate. And I think he nails it. This should be concerning all of us about how corrupt our system has become. Also today, we're going to have a person who's going to tell us about the economy, and this is a person, Peter Schiff, who's been correct in, like Gerald Celante, predicting trends, predicting what's going to happen and when. And this is at a time when we should be lowering our personal debt as individuals, at the very time when we're increasing our debt, but all in the wrong areas. So I'll get to that as well. And I have some environmental updates as well. So we have a packed show. Let's begin. According to the University of California, Los Angeles, published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, for adults 60 and older, just 4,000 steps a day improves attention and mental skills. Now, historically, the older you became, the less anyone expected you to engage in any activity because you were supposed to take it easy. You were older. Where I grew up in the 1950s in West Virginia, older was 40 and over. And so you never saw anyone exercising. I mean, they just never did. So needless to say, being overweight was accepted. Diabetes was accepted. High blood pressure and heart disease were accepted. Everybody smoked. Everybody drank. Nobody exercised. And that doesn't even include the impact of those of us who didn't smoke, but secondhand smoke in a house. Imagine having a whole family where everyone smokes 3 packs a day. That's the house I grew up in. Imagine what that does to my health. And you can have long-term consequences of that. So then we get to this newer era, let's say from 2000 on, last 17 to 18 years, and we're learning that a lot of these conditions that we take for granted as we age are not diseases of aging. In fact, there are none of these diseases normal to the aging process, because around the world, you can live to be 100 or longer and suffer none of the diseases we suffer from routinely in America. Alzheimer's, dementia, heart disease, cancers, arthritis, fibromyalgia. They don't have in a lot of places because they live healthier lives. And that's passed down tradition to tradition. So here, they're saying just go out and walk. Now, 4,000 steps is not a lot of walking. It's not even a mile. So we should encourage all Americans every day to walk. Now, the further you walk, up to about 3 to 4 miles, the better you are. And I want to put to rest one other notion here, that if you are an athlete and you've been training and racing throughout your career, as I have, you must continue to keep up the long-distance training. Just the opposite is true, because what you're doing is you're speeding up the aging of these muscle cells in your legs. Now, someone looking at your legs think they look fine, but you go out to do a run now, if you've been an athlete a long time, and the muscles just don't have the energy, you burn up your mitochondria, you've prematurely aged your cells. And that's what I have found when I'm talking with people who are long-distance runners for more than 10 years. So here's what I suggest. If you're training for a race, any competition, train at the level of the race. So if you're doing a 20K, well, you train about 12 miles. But the moment that race is over, then you go back to about 3 miles a day. Simply stated, we should not be training longer than 3 miles a day unless we're actively competing in a longer race than 3 miles. Because 3 miles of power walking or jogging will, and that would equate to about 15 miles of biking at high intensity, meaning great resistance. You put it in the hardest gear. You don't go to the light gears. That will give you all the conditioning, improved circulation, better detoxification, the feel-good hormones, the endorphins secreting and being in your blood for the next 6 hours. You don't need to do more than that. In fact, you'll actually harm yourself with oxidative stress if you do more. So the older we get, we should stick around 3 miles. I would love to see all people over the age of 40 doing 3 miles a day, vigorous 3 miles, not just slow, not junk miles, but vigorous. And this study is showing that it can make enormous difference with mental skills and attention. Now, that's just one thing, one piece of a puzzle. Imagine if they actually did a study like we're going to be doing in the new year, from all over the world, by the way. The new study will not be at a location. I'm changing the way I do. I've done 41 clinical studies using lifestyle and behavior modification in my career. The latest have been, all of them that I can recall, have been published and presented at scientific conferences. The latest just a couple months ago, and we're going to publish these so you can read them for yourself. These are peer-reviewed journals. But it requires coming into a location, depending upon the study, and the length of the study could be every week for 3 months, every week for a half year or a year. It's not realistic. It's not convenient for people. And there's new times now. So we're going to be doing it over the internet, and we're going to be doing it by video conferencing. So if I'm at my home, I can have a studio. I'm building a state-of-the-art studio where I can talk with you right on your computer. It's better than Skype. And therefore, I can see you. And if you don't have a Skype, you can call in and you can listen in. And all the information I would normally give at a health support group, I'll be able to give. So this way, people who are not in a vicinity where they can be there physically can now anywhere in the world. And we're all over the world. Every day, you can participate. And my first study in the new year, which will last 3 months, and we'll be meeting every week, will be on reversing brain aging naturally. That means people with dementia, memory loss, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, forgetfulness, insomnia, depression, anxiety, all the conditions that come with our brain being maladaptive to its normal biochemistry, we'll be addressing. Now, don't write or call on this because it hasn't been finalized. But once it is, I'll announce it, and people who want to join can. So let's get people walking, and especially people who are suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's. Also, this is from Johns Hopkins University, and it says that, and this is published in Current Biology, you can take a break from practice, any practice, piano practice, basketball practice, learning a language skill practice, but not for too long. This I found interesting. I'll quote it. It says, common wisdom says that you learn better if you study or practice over a period of time, with breaks between study periods, rather than trying to cram everything into a marathon session. New research from a Johns Hopkins postdoctoral fellow suggests that for certain types of learning, success depends upon the length of your breaks. And it went on to talk about don't take real long breaks. And I think any of us who are doing things should understand you can't just drop out. I do lectures all the time. My webinars are lectures. The lectures I do in person, I don't announce because they're always packed. I don't want people coming and being disappointed and can't get in. But I do them also to keep my mind sharp. I don't want to be one of those people that does a lecture and then decides not to lecture again for 6 months, because you lose that sharpness. It would be no different no matter what you're doing. So the idea is work at something. Don't cram it. Don't exhaust yourself. Work at a normal pace. Then give yourself a break. Let's say a week. Take a week off. Then come back to it again at a normal pace. And then put yourself in a situation to test it. You know, see if you're improving, getting better at it. And you start taking 6 months off. Look at how your health goes downhill if you stop juicing, stop eating right. And how many times have I heard people say, yeah, well, I'm not in the best shape right now. I was, but I'm not. I want to give you share with you an insight that can help put all this together. Frequently when people come to retreats, they're not coming because they're vitally healthy and extremely happy and want to enhance it. More often than not, people come because they have some issue they want to address, or multiple issues. And to the best that I can, and my staff, we work towards that goal. It's non-medical. There's no diagnosing or treating ever. Instead, the whole emphasis is helping facilitate a person's own healing potential. Because in all of us, we are all spiritual beings, and touching that, opening that door, and it has nothing to do with religion. It has to do with the quality of your beliefs and your values and honoring your authentic self rather than honoring your conditioned self. And sometimes when I'm talking with people who have a disease, and I never ask them, they're wanting a specific, now, how much vitamin C? I never talk about that. That's irrelevant. As tens of thousands of people I've counseled will tell you. But then ask those same tens of thousands of people, how many of you are better today? How many of you are alive today that would be dead? And it's a lot. Instead, I ask about what is the meaning and purpose of your life? And this connects to what's going on today. Doctors always come to the retreats, and they come to the health support groups, and they're quiet, and they sit in the back, and they take notes. And only when it's over and they're listening to the final testimonials, we film people on the first day of their to see what they're there for, how long they've had a condition, and how much they're suffering, and what medications they're taking, etc. And then the last day, whether it's a month or a year, and what changes have occurred, how they feel, what does their attending physician say about this? And then they come up after and says, I don't understand this. We can't come up with these results. How can you come up with these results? I said, well, I'm just using a different paradigm. That's all. It's not about intent. I fully respect your intent to help people. But if you're using the wrong tools, because those are the tools that have been dictated and those are the tools people profit from, then you're not going to have the same results. So, and I don't look at a body as diseased. I look at a body as out of balance. So getting a person back into balance is the key to stimulating their own innate healing capacity. And of course, you can get it back into balance with juices and living foods, with meditation and journaling, listening to calming music and being around animals, and a beautiful environment. And that's what I try to provide. Once a year, I try to do this. So there was one case, and you'll hear the woman in her own words, who came with terminal cancer. And it was metastasized all over her body. She couldn't walk. She was in a wheelchair. And the reason she came was not because she felt she could get well. In fact, she spoke with Richard Gale, and Richard said, can you call this woman? I did. And she said, I've tried everything. I'm a 40 2-year practicing oncology nurse. So needless to say, when I was diagnosed with cancer, all my colleagues, the doctors, the hospital, the place I've worked, they did everything they could. Then I tried everything alternative medicine. I said, well, why are you calling me then? Because maybe you can do something with pain. I saw you on PBS and you were talking about overcoming pain. And I've got a tumor on my knee that I can't move. And it just creates excruciating pain. And I'm taking opiates for the other tumors on my body. She had tumors all over her body. I mean, visibly large tumors on her breast, armpits, her back. So I said, well, I make no promises, but I'll do the best I can to help you. So she came. And not once did I talk about a protocol. Now, you got to understand that. Not once. Instead, I ask her a simple question. What do you have to live for? Because she said she had given up her career. She had sold all of her possessions. She had donated her money. And she said, I'm ready to die. I'm going to die. I just would like to have a week or two without this excruciating pain. Because when I'm in this kind of pain, I've got to take the opiates. When I take the opiates, I'm just so in a different altered state, I can't even comprehend who's in front of me. My own children. I don't know what they're saying. I don't want that. All right. I said, but you didn't answer the question. What do you have to live for? What is the central meaning of your life? What is the legacy you want to live and leave? And she couldn't answer me. And she didn't know. I said, then that's the journey that you should be taking. And she didn't understand that. And so for about 3 days, she was just spent all of her time talking with people. And finally, I said, it's time to go into silence and be with nature and yourself. And I would give her some questions to ask herself about life. Did she feel that she had to forgive anyone who had hurt her in any way, even if they were dead? And she said, yeah, a lot of people. Do you have people that you would like to ask forgiveness from, who you might have slighted, gossiped about, even if they're not aware of it? Yeah, a lot. I said, then start writing them letters. But more importantly, writing an apology letter, explain to them what kind of mindset you were in that allowed you or convinced you you should be doing something like this or tolerating someone's abuse. About 4 hours later, I walked over to where she was, and she was just crying profusely. I mean, inconsolably. Deep, deep cries and sobbing. And she said, I didn't realize when I opened this door what was going to come out. And so she just stayed and wrote. And I said, now, read each one and just burn them. Everything in the universe is connected. We're all energy, so harmonizing the energy of forgiveness, harmonizing the energy of humility and asking for forgiveness, these vibrate, and these energies vibrate throughout the universe and will connect. And she did. And the next day, she gets up, she comes down. She didn't have her walker with her, her wheelchair sitting over at the side. She says, can I go for a walk? I said, sure you can. Even though I got bone cancer? Yeah. And she walked. Well, one of the guests took a video of her dancing a week later in the gym. I mean, real dancing. And jumping all over the place. And on the very last day that she was there, because each day I gave a different lesson. That was the forgiveness lesson, but there are many other lessons. And because we're holding people's energy in, even subconsciously, we can hold it in our gut, we can hold it in our rectum, we can hold it in our breasts, we can hold it in our throat, we can hold it in our brain. Wherever you're holding that energy, you imbalance and put into gridlock the vital life force that's there. And that's why some people say, oh, you know, you make me sick to my stomach. Oh, you're pain in the neck. Oh, you know, you broke my heart. And that's where they've locked that energy, and that's where their symptoms are. So you have to rebalance that energy. In any case, And that's not just true with her. It was true for everyone I work with. And so there were five other physicians there who were guests, and one was a board-certified oncologist from University of Pennsylvania, a leading Orthodox oncologist, and was there primarily because her husband wanted her to see a different way that people can become healthy. I mean, if you go into cancer hospitals, they're feeding you ice cream and bacon and sugar and coffee, the very things that cause cancer, they're feeding you. So they're clueless. So she watched all this. And during that two-week period, she was spending time with this person. And on the final day, the five doctors were asked, the woman asked, would you do me a favor? Will you palpate these tumors for me? And I didn't know this was going on. So they went up to her room and they were palpating her tumors. And they couldn't find any. She was in no pain at all. And she hadn't taken any drugs since she was there. And so she got up and she made a little talk, which we filmed, and you'll hear it. You'll hear the audio clip about she didn't know what happened, but she knows that she's not going home to die now. She's going home to live. But here's the key. Here's the touchstone moment. In my final conversation with her before she left, I said, understand something. You have been shown an experience, and look what it's done for you. You must recreate this every single day. The day you don't practice healing and spirituality and giving to others and in service to humanity and being honest no matter what the cost and being positive no matter how it impacts other people, when you will not compromise on principles of behavior, principles of decency and ethics, morality, where you will stay moral around immoral people. You'll stay positive around gossipy, negative, bitchy, angry, victimized mindset people. You will not fall into that energy. That is the day that you are healthy. Miss one day and you revert back into disease. Now, once you go one day eating sugar and then you want another day to eat sugar, but you're sure you'll stop, then one day you're forgetting what day it is. It's just another day to comport with your desires, comfort foods, conversations with toxic people, and then you're right back. And you know when you do that, your cancer is going to come back. So this whole idea that somehow we're cured or somehow that we are healthy or that we're happy or that we're spiritual or that we're ethical or that we're honest, this is all myth. That's complete nonsense. You're never healthy. You're never happy. What you are is you are living a life that you create where you don't have to go find happiness, buy happiness, barter happiness through a relationship, find yourself through someone else. You'll never find yourself. You'll adapt, but you won't find yourself. But when you can wake up and realize what you have to be grateful for and what you have to be happy for, then that day you're honoring happiness. The day when you can walk by someone and say, oh, someone else will help them. It's snowing. They're cold. They're shivering. They're in a cardboard box. The city will take care of them. And you walk on by. That's the day you're no longer spiritual. When you say, well, just once I can do this, that's the day you're no longer healthy. Now, the hour before, you may have been up doing everything healthy. But what we fail to realize, and this is so important, is that everything in life is a process. It's an energy stream. So you have to keep recreating and using the very tools and methods that allowed you to overcome obstacles, to get to happiness and out of depression, out of anxiety. There is no such thing as schizophrenia. It's not a brain chemical imbalance. It's an emotional imbalance. It's a belief imbalance. It's a behavioral imbalance. And hence it can be corrected because it's a process. If it was a noun, You're not going to change it. If it's a verb, you can change it. I'm cancering versus, oh, I got the big C, I got cancer. Where I came from, it was fatal. Everything was fatalistic. Oh, you got cancer, you're going to die. Instead of, I'm processing my body from disease into wellness. Well, then you put the person in charge of the very dynamic of their own healing process, or they're in charge of their diseasing process. Now, when I can take calls, and I'm going to save it till I can, I'm going to play you the comments, spontaneous comments, these other physicians who were there and witnesses, and what they had to say about it. How do you take something that you cannot fit into your existing mindset or paradigm? It is so alien because they've never experienced it in their careers, not once. How can you take that and understand it, even if you're there, even if you're doing an examination, even if you're talking with someone? How do you take that person's experience and put it into 25 years of seeing people die, but giving them what you think is the right chemotherapy? How does that work? It doesn't, and it can't, because the dominant energy will always collapse all other energies and all other realities and all other troops under it. And that's why people use their careers, use their positions of authority and deferment to stop growing. The more you achieve in America, the more successful you are, the less growth you engage in. You don't have to. You're successful. You're famous. You're a celebrity. Live on it. So you protect it. So then you try to protect what you have instead of growing and surrendering old knowledge so you can embrace new. We don't have humility as a part of our gestalt for success. And that's why we have so many people who have power but are not spiritual, and they abuse that power and use it in the wrong way. More on this, because it just, that triggered my thought when I was talking about, you know, we get out of the habit of doing something and then we think, well, I'm okay. No, you're not. You got to keep at it, and with health, every single day. You can't give it a break. And if you're going to give something a break, give something a break that's short break and come right back to it, and then challenge yourself to make sure you're using that break to rest and then improve. But it doesn't work when health. It's not like saying, okay, I'm going to rest from eating healthy, now I'm going to eat junk food. No, that's not rest. That's hubris and stupidity. And there's a consequence. And finally, from the University of Groningen in Germany, there's a strong link between poor vitamin K status and cardiovascular death. And vitamin K, as we know, is an essential nutrient necessary for responding to injuries, to regulate normal blood clotting, and by assisting in the transport of calcium throughout the body. And vitamin K is also helpful for bone health, and it can reduce bone loss and decrease the risk of bone fractures. And vitamin K is known as a procoagulant and may also be useful for atherosclerosis and heart disease. So when brain cells do not have enough energy, they begin to die off and disrupting signals and causing movement impediments. So at-risk groups for deficiency are those subject to decreased production of vitamin K2 by normal intestinal microbiota. And that's why you have to have vitamin K in your diet and be taking the right probiotics on a daily basis, and then watch your bones improve. You don't need a lot, 1 to 2 milligrams, but it's important. I'm Gary Noll. We're halfway through our program. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. Our sister station, WBAI, where I've been on for 41 years, is having transmitter problems. It's in the Empire State Building. They had an energy surge, and some of the components burned out. They have ordered, and hopefully by today, they will have those components in or tomorrow. So within the next 24 hours, we're hopeful that that station will be back on the air and you'll be able to hear it. I just don't think that management is fully aware of how much of a loss of audience they're going to have because of that. When you're off the air for 5 days, 24/7, whoa, that is really, really serious. So hopefully the core listeners will stay and come back on. Tomorrow evening, a private screening of my new hard-hitting documentary, Deadly Deception. You can watch the trailer for the film by going up on prn.fm. P-R-N is in Nancy, prn.fm, or progressiveradionetwork.com and watch it. I've purchased some tickets, 50 tickets, just for senior citizens or those who are financially strapped, and turn them over to the theater so you're able to come at a substantial discount. So you can give a call for those who are financially challenged. You'll still get a copy of the film, but you're going to save some money, about a third. So call 212-864-5400, 212-864-5400. It begins at 7 o'clock. I'll be there. We'll have a discussion afterwards. And for all of you everywhere else, the worldwide premiere and press conference and a slew of articles will be in the middle of January, and I'll notify everyone when that's going to occur because we're going to start a whole movement at that time, including class action lawsuits. And you'll see in this film, there's new information. I managed to find people in Denmark and other countries who have information that the public is not aware of, the media is not aware of. So my hope is that we will give all this to them so they can start to deconstruct a major institution. Again, tomorrow night, call 212-864-5400, and we have a deep discount for senior citizens and people with limited financial means. Now, I want to talk about the Republican tax bill and why I'm opposed to it. And I'm going to share some specifics. Look at companies such as Apple, Pfizer, Walmart, Microsoft, General Electric, IBM, Johnson & Johnson, Merck, Google, ExxonMobil, Procter & Gamble, Citigroup, Chevron, Goldman Sachs, and Eli Lilly. What do they have in common? Because of this tax bill, they will end up with an additional $236 billion in tax cuts. So over the past 30 years, 15 of the largest U.S. corporations received $3.9 trillion in corporate welfare and subsidies and tax credits and bailouts and an additional $108 billion in federal contracts. Let me repeat that, because at no time was this actual figure shared with the American public, that the 15 of the largest corporations in America received, in the last 30 years, $3.9 trillion in corporate welfare and subsidies and tax credits and bailouts. And I mentioned the corporations. I just named them by name. Now, if you take an analysis from the Tax Policy Center, 82% of the bill benefits just the 0.1% of Americans, and 60% goes to 0.1% by 2027. And the GOP's figures and rationale are misleading. Middle-income taxpayers will get less than 10% of the benefit from the corporate tax cut. There's no clear link between tax cuts and jobs growth, as the GOP promises. Let me explain that. Right now, some corporations have massive profits. How do they get them? Well, there's several ways to get them. First is bring in on the visas highly educated, very diligent, hardworking people from South Korea and India and China, and give them the jobs of longtime loyal Americans who had worked up to where they had seniority. Maybe they worked in a company for 20, 30 years. They were making a good standard of living. It was able to help them with an upper middle class lifestyle. They could send their kids to private colleges. They could vacation. They could pay for their house. And they deserve that. They work for that. These were not millionaires. And those are the jobs they're taking because now they can pay one of these foreign persons. And I don't blame the foreign person. There's nothing unethical about them. But they're going to work for $40,000 or $50,000 instead of $100,000, $150,000. So you have enormous savings. Then these are the people that go against the concept of first fired. If these people have just been hired in the last year, historically, you would get rid of them because they hadn't accrued extra pay days and vacation days and sick days and weren't getting the big bonuses. But now the people who have been there for a long time, they're going to be the first victims because they're the most costly of the company. That means the company can then brag that, look how much we saved by downsizing and shifting our employment base. Then you have robotics. Many companies, 58,000 factories alone closed in the last 17 years, and in no small measure, many of those because of corporate buyouts, equity partnerships. These are the vultures of American capitalism. These are the people who knowingly find a company that's vulnerable, buy it, load it up with debt, and it goes bankrupt. They still own it. They can take it out of bankruptcy. And they're every penny that comes in, they're gorging on. So that's another way they've been able to take a famous brand, because it's the brand people buy, not the product, not the person that sells it to them. I don't care how good the salesperson is. Eventually, that person is going to be retired or someone else take their place, but the brand stays the same. So they can take a brand that had been in a city in the United States for a long time, giving gainful employment with benefits to a whole community. In fact, an entire community like Flint, Michigan, could be based upon the health and well-being of General Motors or one of the other car companies. And now they take that and they take it over to China or down to Mexico, where you don't have all the workman's compensation, you don't have the environmental protection laws, you don't have OSHA, and you don't have the union bargaining, and you can pay people minimum wage. And because there's so much unemployment, they'll line up for that, as we saw with NAFTA. It created a whole poverty belt along the border, and we were promised these people would have a good quality of life. They didn't, just the opposite. So you then say to your Wall Street analyst, talk well about us. Talk us up, because we've made additional margins of profit. Our stock is reflective of that. We're now trading at 27-1, meaning the actual worth of the company is 27 times what they're actually earning. And that's obscene when the national average is generally around 14, and that's high. I believe it should be 2, meaning whatever you're earning, you should not be valued more than 2 times that. But anyhow, it's like fractional banking. I don't believe a bank should be able to loan out more money than what it has. But that's me. So in any case, now they take a third stance. They automate. Even if they keep the company in the United States, you no longer have to have 400 people on a floor putting an engine in a car or making a television set. It's automated. The initial investment pays itself back multiple times because that machine doesn't have a union, doesn't have sick days, and you've still been able to say, well, we make it in America. Yeah, but you cut back the workforce. Then they also buy back their own stock. So do you think that a penny of this $1 trillion-plus dollars is going to go back into the economy? Not a penny. That's the biggest lie ever. They're going to buy back their stock. Why? Because the more stock you have out into the marketplace, the less value a single share is. But if you start buying that stock back, then the value of the existing stock increases. And frequently, the people who are running a company, their bonuses, their pay are based upon the value of the stock after year in, year out, and year-over-year profits. And so, yeah, we increased the value of our stock by 15%, so I should be paid another $5 million. So you see, they've lied to you. Now, in addition to that, who benefits from this? The reality is the 1% will get $85 billion. The next richest 19% get $140 billion. These are your millionaires, multimillionaires. And foreign investors get $48 billion. And the next richest get $43 billion. And then the middle class gets $25 billion. The second poorest gets $13 billion. And the poorest gets $3 billion. And so you have to understand that when you spread that amongst how many people there are in the poor class, middle class, working class, it's very little. In fact, AARP did an analysis that 1 in 5 seniors, that's 6.3 million, will see no change in taxes, and 1.2 million of those will have a tax increase by next year. And by just 10 years from now, it'll increase 400% with 5.2 million middle-class seniors with higher taxes. And there was analysis from the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School of Business, and the economic growth and job growth will be minuscule. So they're not going to go spending money where they don't have to. They're going to consolidate it to themselves, no different than the big banks who took in the money from the public to keep from going under, solvent, and becoming insolvent or going through bankruptcy. They didn't make their companies better. They bought their competition. They became bigger. So the big, too big to fail banks became humongous, too big to fail banks. And with that, they can actually deduct the cost of lobbying. So then they turn around and lobby to make sure that they're protected even more. That's why we now have a bail-in policy, that if the banks fail, we the people, our savings, everything in that bank that belongs to us is immediately captured by the bank that's failing. And we're given some minuscule ownership in a worthless stock. They did it in Cyprus. It's already law. Obama signed that law in the Christmas holidays. So now we have bail-in. There's another aspect to this. And that is, we're living in a bubble, multiple bubbles. Commercial real estate bubble. Just walk up and down Manhattan, where I'm at right now. Walk up Amsterdam and Broadway and Columbus on the Upper West Side. Walk up 3rd Avenue and Madison Avenue on the East Side, 2nd Avenue. You'll see hundreds collectively of empty shops where there used to be people that were your neighbors. And you had small business people, not now. The rents are astronomical. $150, $175 a square foot. Who can afford that? Not someone making a small percentage of profit. And so hundreds of thousands, according to my brother, Stephen, who heads the group that speaks on behalf of all the small businesses in New York that have gone out of business, the city council is not interested in the small business people. The state has already been co-opted and corrupted by the landlords. So you're going to see more of the mauling, meaning brands like, oh, let's say, Bed Bath & Beyond. Now, they sell good stuff. I have nothing against them. But now they're taking up a place that used to be the Food Emporium. And then there used to be 3 other stores where the Food Emporium was. So you have a block that would hold 11 stores, now holding 1 or 2. The banks, drug stores, and national brands. Small mom and pops, gone. So that's one of the consequences. Also, you have a bubble with cars. They made it so cheap. Come on in today. No money down. Don't care about your credit. You know, we'll give you a car and no payments for 6 months. Yeah, well, what about the 4 million people who can't pay their car payments? There's a huge, huge debt that is outstanding. And what about all the students that have $1.4 trillion in debt? Almost 5 million students are delinquent. They can't pay anything. And little do they know, there in some states, there's debtors' prisons, privately owned operations that can arrest you and bring you in, their own judges, their own police, their own bail bondsmen, their own probation officers, and you pay every one of those charges, including paying $120 to $135 a day for being incarcerated for a bill that might have been $30 to $40, that you couldn't pay the bill, and so now you got $2,000 worth of court fees against you. So they're going to start arresting students or their parents who have co-signed on the note or confiscating their bank accounts, which they're legally allowed to do. Buying debt is a big business, big business. These vultures buy up people who haven't paid on their credit card and then harass them nonstop. And the state allows them to do it. The federal government allows them to do it. So that's what we're faced with. In point of fact, here are two of the latest things. It says Americans say they are worse off today than 50 years ago. This is from MarketWatch. It says, but 20 other countries say they're better off. And then they list the countries like Sweden, the Netherlands, Turkey, Germany, India, South Korea, Japan, Poland, Spain, and they're much better off. In America, no, we're worse off. We're worse off than all these other 20 countries, and yet we're the ones who made the money. No, we didn't make the money. Two groups of people in America made money that really was substantial. The millionaire class, of which there are 10 million. And the professional class, lawyers, doctors, engineers, architects, CPAs, consultants, and money managers, and professors, they make between $100,000 to $1 million a year. Here's the problem. They have a family of four average, husband, wife, and two children. That's average. So if you take 17 million, it's actually 17.2 million, but round it off, 17 million times four, what do you get? Oh, 60 plus million? A lot of money, 68 million. Now add in the 10 million millionaires. Now you're at 100 million people. So 100 million Americans have been spending like crazy. And the professional class has tried to keep up with the very rich class, and so they're in debt up to their eyeballs. They've overspent on everything, and very little of what they own is able to earn them any money. So when they get into hawk, they have to sell things at fire prices. So that's a bubble, and that's going to collapse. The moment that no one's talking about, but I'm going to tell you, the moment that the dollar is no longer the primary reserve currency. Now, it'll always be a reserve currency, but there's nothing backing the dollar except the good faith in the United States government. Well, a lot of people don't have that faith. They want gold to back it up. And China and Russia have been mining or purchasing hundreds of tons of gold. So they're able to back up the yuan and the ruble. And other countries like India are trying to do the same or trading amongst themselves. So you have a whole lot of people around the world now who are not in an economic slump and who are more solvent because they have not created massive debt. So we've been living by buying things, whether it's corporations or state governments or city governments, federal government, individuals. I'll put it on my credit card. And then the bill comes. Now you got to use another credit card to pay that credit card. It's called kiting. Well, we have $200 trillion in debt. We are the most debt-ridden country in the world, in world history, and we're about 12 times, 1,200% our income to our debt. And that's when you give people a tax break? That's insane. Because what exactly is supposed to be used to fund our infrastructure, like high-speed rails across the country and rebuilding our bridges and tunnels and water and gas lines and our streets and our highways? What exactly is supposed to be used, what currency, to pay for relocating people off the oceans that are being invaded by seawater coming in at night, or building some kind of walls or dikes or levees that would help limit the impact as they've done in the Netherlands? We don't have that money. So the value of the dollar is being challenged. And within 2 years, I predict that China will overcome the United States as the number one economic power. When that happens, you're going to see a collapsing of the dollar in value. That means everything attached to that dollar is going to be a balloon that is burst. That means your equity in Wall Street, it'll come down by $20 to $30 trillion be lost. That means your investments and savings through your pension funds that are invested in that equity bubble. That means the housing market right now is a massive bubble. It reinflated. It's up over 40% in value. It shouldn't be. Houses should only increase in value about 1% to 2% per year. In a very good year, 3%. And for about 10 years, they were increasing as much as 100% per year. That's insane. And so people went out to buy more and more and more. So that shows you that we have Americans who are worse off, Americans who don't have $400 to their name, Americans who couldn't go. I'm looking at the net worth of the average person. Even people have been conservative, $81,200. Their savings, 3.1%. Wow. That means if the money stopped coming in, they've got about anywhere from a couple weeks to a couple months, and they're on the street. They're insolvent. Debt, $31,590. That doesn't mean Los Angeles, doesn't mean San Francisco, Miami, New York, Brooklyn, where you got a whole lot more mortgage debt than that. Auto debt, average. This is an average per capita. Well, what about the people that don't own cars? They're still included. $4,340. It's actually closer to about $20,000. Credit card debt. It's actually close to about $16,000, but they're saying $2,930 because they're growing per capita based upon population with credit reports. And then student debt. So you start looking at all these debts that people have, and we don't have the income to offset it. And so this is just the time when we give the richest people who don't need the money instead of having universal health care so nobody goes broke and everyone is treated humanely by taking the profit out and by increasing people's hourly wages so they can go from a subsistence wage to a living wage. Corporations are not doing that. They're fighting it. What we should do is simple. We should grow up and have a flat tax. We should eliminate the income tax, personal income tax, completely. We should eliminate the IRS. We should eliminate the Federal Reserve and allow the Treasury alone that was constitutionally mandated to print and distribute money at zero interest. We should forgive all outstanding debt, including the $800 billion that we give banks for nothing. They created no risk, nor did they actually give us that cash to be given this back. It's the most insane Ponzi scheme in history. The fact that the Federal Reserve gives its member banks a percentage, though they say that it's not actually profit. Yes, it is. So we should have a flat tax on every dollar earned by companies. And it should be the same and no deductions allowed. No more parking trillions of dollars offshore. Can't do it anymore. Now, if we did that and you made it reasonable, let's say 15%, we would bring in over $1 trillion extra dollars a year. Trillion. That's because the $3.6 trillion over the last 30 years that we gave these companies that don't pay income tax at all, like General Electric, that gets $5 trillion in subsidies from us, even though they're making billions of dollars in profit, we should cut out all subsidies. If you're too big to fail, you should fail. You should go through structured bankruptcy, like any small business person would. Small business people in the United States are the backbone of the labor force. They employ more people than the government, state, federal, and local, and the Fortune 500 companies combined. Yet they're given no advantages, just disadvantages. The big companies can always hire tax lawyers and CPAs so they don't pay taxes. We have to close that door completely. If you make it, you pay it. No deductions, no allowances, no subsidies. That's it. And then watch the money come back into the United States. Give them a one-time amnesty. You can bring your $31 trillion personal and corporate profits back that you've parked in the Cayman Islands and Jersey and the island of Jersey and other places in Luxembourg. You can bring it back. you'll pay a 20% tax on it. Well, that would give us another $5 trillion. So if we were smart, instead of being political and mercenary, we would have a flat corporate tax with no deductions and no subsidies. If you're not smart enough to run a good business, you shouldn't be running a business, period. And then we should be giving interest-free loans up to $5 million to small businesses that are guaranteed that they'll hire two employees for every $1 million at a living wage and health, and start to rebuild the local communities instead of having massive rust belts all over the country. That's what we should do. We won't, but we should. Now, for those of you who are still thinking that somehow Trump has done you a favor, and Mitch McConnell and these other clowns, and they're all clowns, they're imbeciles in my opinion, they have no knowledge of what it is to be an average person. They never come and spend a month in your home to see how you make a Social Security check last, or meager wage last, or what compromise you have to make in the quality of your life in order just to exist in a certain locale. They don't want to come, they won't come, but they're going to tell you what you should believe in, and you should believe in them. So this game should be over. The Democrats have betrayed you, the conservatives have betrayed you, Republicans, the whole corporate class has used you, lied to you, manipulated you. It's time that you get off their grid and start organizing and protesting. If the senior citizens alone would organize and protest this, it could make a difference, but they won't. If the students and the professors went on general strike until all student debt was forgiven, but they won't. In fact, today, we're not in enough pain yet to protest anything. A little handful of people here and a handful there, a nation of 330 million, and you're lucky to have 1,000 people protest in any month against anything. What does that tell you about the people? Not just what they're protesting. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. And this program will be posted up on Facebook later today. Have a nice day, everyone.